Okay, great. I was thinking the Sangha and the preciousness of Sangha. As you know, in our tradition, Sangha is a very important part of our practice. And the understanding is that it's okay to practice alone, and it's also important to, on our path of liberation, be able to have the conditions to keep us on the path. And often in the world and in the more secluded places of practice, like a temple or monastery or a retreat center, that's exactly what is happening, right? So in the retreat centers and in the monastery, there's a community of practice. And so people are dedicating their lives to be on this path. And Tayo would say that it's easier to practice in the monastery than to practice in the world. And why is that? Because the conditions are more supportive in the monastery because of Sangha. It's exactly because of that, right? There's a schedule, and the worldly winds and the world as we know it, the job and the school and family and the life of a householder is not pulling at us in the world. It's all very beautiful. It's not a judgment that one is better than the other. It's simply a noting that when we have Sangha around us, it helps us with our practice. Because we all know that in the world, there are many things calling us, impinging on us, distracting us from our good intention, our beautiful intention, this intention of wholesomeness, this intention of freedom, of liberation, this intention of transforming our suffering, so that we can bring that transformed self into the world and benefit the world, benefit all beings, or bodhicitta, or bodhisattva ideal. And yet, right after that setting of intention, and maybe the sit in the morning and we get into it, and as they say, and they're off. And all the things come in. And I see everybody smiling because it's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. I also want to share that having lived in the monast in two of our Plum Village monasteries for almost 3 years, I won't say that after the intention, the morning sit with the community, and then we move back, walk back over to where we are sleeping or staying. You can, and it's off also. And any of you who've gone to any retreat center, you know this is so. Except what happens is we see other people practicing, right? Because everyone's there with this similar intention. And that reminds us, it's our mindfulness bell. We may see another lay person or a monastic, a long-term person, if it's a retreat center, walking mindfully. And then oh, right. And then we come back to our mindful steps. Or we might want to talk and remember, oh, we're in noble silence till after breakfast. So we don't say anything. And then when we do start talking, we may go out in our big way sometimes, as we do. But we notice that the talking is more a little hushed, maybe. There's a more intentionality around our tone. And maybe there's even an intentionality around, do we really need to speak, actually? And so this continued surrounding, being surrounded by practitioners, it keeps bringing us back, right? So we start off every morning, and then it's like this, yeah. And in the practice centers, there are other people around us who are also practicing. So when we are benefiting from them, this is what the Sangha affords us or offers us. And they benefit from us, because in those moments when they're in forgetfulness, our fellow practitioners, and we are in mindfulness, and they see us mindfully walking or mindfully eating our breakfast, quietly chewing for 30 times or 20 or whatever it is, and you look across the table and you see someone doing that, someone might see you doing it, you come back, you're like, oh, right, I'm here for this. Because the mind is such a, oh my gosh, it's just such a trickster. Right? That's one of the things that the mind is gets called as a trickster. It's always trying to engage us into something else of its own doing, right? Some teachers say there's a committee of the mind. There's the intentional practitioner, there's the trickster, there's the socialite, there's the rigid practitioner that maybe holds too tight, yeah, too tight, because that can happen too. And so this when we practice with Sangha, whether it's in a monastic, more secluded setting, or whether it's in a Sangha like this or an in-person Sangha, the Sangha helps us to find that balance. If we're trying to be too rigid or too adherent in a way where we're not breathing easily, we see someone else and we're like, oh yeah. Or if we're not remembering, right? I mean, simple thing is the bowing. Why do we bow, right? I find bowing really precious, because I know if I went out there and started bowing to everybody, they would summarily and quickly make some decision about my mental state, and who knows what else would happen. But in our Sangha, it feels very precious to bow, because I can offer this bow, this deep gratitude, this my Buddha nature in me. The Buddha nature in me sees the Buddha nature in you, bows to that. I honor that. We're connected because we are remembering our divinity. And sometimes I'm in a meeting and I want to bow, and then I think, all right, let's not do that right here. But in my mind, I might bow. And when I'm finished saying something, I try to remember to say thank you for listening, which is another way that we are acknowledging that we appreciate the person, the kindness, right? The kindness, the compassion that our practice invites us into in a daily way. The training, it's a continuous training of the mind and heart. Yeah, because so much more would like to lead us into different ways of being. So the practice is really dependent, if you will, in the world. I really strongly think that without Sangha, without having a Sangha in the world, it's just so much more difficult to practice. And something that we like to say in BBMC is that everyone is there to teach us, to and we're teaching everyone, meaning. And that's what practice does. And when we share in Dharma sharing, etc., we're sharing about our practice. Oh, this is this is how I meditate, or this is what was said, brought up in me, and we're listening to each other, and that insight that we experience, we share, and someone else benefits from it. And the form of the teacher, it takes many different forms, and it's not skillful or wise to get caught up in who is the Bodhisattva? What do they look like? It's hard for us not to become attached to a perception of who someone who we think is on this path of practice may look like. And you never know who that teacher will be. And I think one of the beauties of Dharma sharing in our tradition is we get to drop some of that veil of judgment of who we think the teacher is. And if we actually listen deeply, we learn from everyone. And that's a beautiful thing, yeah. And I wanted to mention a sutra that really I think speaks directly to what that we really don't know who the teacher is. The Avatamsaka Sutra, the flower garland sutra, or the sutra of great adornment with flowers. It's a Mahayana sutra. It's a very long sutra. In fact, it's thought to be, let me write the name in the chat here. Avatamsaka Sutra. It's known to be the one of the longest sutras. And within the sutra, there are smaller sutras. And the one I want to refer to is the Gandhavya Sutra. And there's an accent, I think, on the. Think it's, I'm not remembering. I think it's on the YU. So this is not for your Googling now. This is, okay. This is for your Googling later, because there's so much to learn from these beautiful sutras. The reason I bring it up is in the sutra, in the Avatamsaka Sutra, or the particular shorter sutra within it, the Gandhavya Sutra, one of the Buddha's disciples is said to send a student to learn from 52 teachers, Sudana is the name of the student. And so the student wants to learn, and the monk says, "You have to go and learn, go out and learn." And so Sudana goes and meets 52 different people, but not 52 people who are named teachers or known to be teachers. These are people he meets as his, in his traveling. And they differ so widely. And because he has been taught that everyone can offer something, he's able to learn from these different people. One of them is a prostitute, who in the sutra, is said to be a bodhisattva. And it's like that. It's the understanding that everyone has something to teach. And if we are open enough and spacious enough, that spaciousness that we talked about last week, if we are spacious enough, we are able to know, to receive the teachings. And it'll look differently depending on who it is, because everyone brings their own experience. This was the reason Sudhana was sent out, was you can learn from the different angles of experience the teachings, because everyone will bring their experience and they will interpret it within their own life. And if we listen deeply, we'll probably hear a similar teaching, but it'll come packaged in something quite different, right? And I think that's the beauty of this particular sutra, is, at least for me, when I read it, was you can really learn from everyone. Everyone has something deep to teach us. And so what I learned from this is we have an idea of what Sangha is, and Sangha is important for us as we come together, you know, weekly, or some of us twice a week or more, some of us every other week. And we know when we come together in Sangha, we can rest in Sangha. We can rest in the fact that everyone is coming together with this good intention, right? Because why would you take 2 hours of your Sunday when you could be doing many and anything else? And so there is some resting in knowing that those of us who want to practice are here to practice. And that some who want to practice maybe don't have the conditions sufficient to be able to join us to practice. And so how lucky are us? How lucky are we here to have the condition to practice, and we want to practice? And so this is what happens when you come together in Sangha, is you rest on the knowing that everyone in this space is here with the similar intention. And again, we bring our different experiences. We're all practicing within our own context and our own conditioning. And yet what we know, and what is actually a privilege and a luxury, is to know that everyone here is trying to understand themselves so that they can relieve their suffering, and so that they can relieve the suffering of the world. That's something, you know, in an age of many things that are chaotic and changing quickly, to have that kind of assurance is actually it's a deep privilege to be able to sit with people and know that we are here for the same reason. We believe in the ability of this practice to help us get free, to find liberation. And so within this Sangha, we are supported. Well, I think what the Avatamsaka Sutra also is pointing to is beyond the self-identified Sangha, there are also many, many teachers who aren't showing up in our designated Sangha spaces for many and various reasons. And for me, it's a sutra that that keeps me open to everyone is a teacher. Everyone is a potential teacher. Even the ones that in that moment may be causing us harm, the practice is inviting us to say, and what else is here? And what else? So it doesn't mean that we just sit there and suffer and grin and bear it and say, because this person is my teacher. No, so let's not get that confused at all. it's acknowledging that the depth of the tradition, which is that within the suffering, there's something else that comes from there. So we take care of the suffering. If there's something we need to stop that's causing harm, we make our best attempt to take care of that. If there's someone causing harm to others, we make our best attempt to take good care of that. And then in the process, we identify what else is here. What has this just taught me? What have I learned from this? And so, even in the world, right, as lay practitioners, even here, we're coming into Sangha or lay Sanghas, and in a way, we can breathe out and rest in Sangha. It's a real rest, because we're here with this collective intention. And then when we leave here, often our guards go up, because now we're moving back in the world. And again, especially these days, there's so much unknown. Things aren't as they seem. There's real intentioning around harm, right? It's not a pretense that we're in a very polarized society, and that these things, it's not that there's polarization, but the polarization causes harm. Yeah. And so we can get really caught up in self-protection and family protection and my stuff protection in these times. And so our practice, and I think what this sutra, the Gandavyuha Sutra, is pointing us to is that let's stay open. Let's stay open. Yeah. Let's figure out how we can, in the midst of all of this ruckus, still be inclusive. And I know this is a hard ask in where we are now. You're Marisela, you tell me to open, keep my heart open. When people are every day saying things and acting in ways to close my heart. Yeah. And yet we're on this path of liberation. We have these deep, beautiful teachings that are pointing us and saying, you know what? What's this teacher teaching me today? So I dare not say, but I will say it. So what does Trump teach us? And I'm not going to answer that. It's more to invite in what someone might say, the absurdity that someone who's causing so much harm is teaching me something. It's teaching me personally that he suffers a lot. I've often wondered about how he was treated as a child. Because only when we suffer so much are we able to dish out that suffering? You have to train in it in order to offer it. It's not possible to offer something you don't know well. Yeah. And so what else? What am I learning? You know, what am I learning from people and processes that cause harm? Not little harm. Big harm. And so our practice is to stay open so that we can gain the insight. And that insight is what keeps our heart open. You see? That's the depth of insight, is it helps us to understand. Yeah, it's a practice of understanding and love, right? Thay always says, you can't love without understanding. And so this understanding is that deep insight, that deep looking, that not closing down so that we can still understand. And out of that understanding, something else comes. In fact, what comes from the understanding can't manifest until the understanding happens. Do you see? So in order to get to the understanding, though, we have to stay open. Because when we close down, when we go to anger and rage and we shut down, we're not able to understand. You know, we lock up. And the space to be able to see more clearly what all is there, that's what allows us the understanding. So the ability to stay open, to stay with space, to remember that right in front of me, there's all this space when I drop all the objects, and that in that space, there's also space inside of me that can hold what is coming and not be traumatized by it. Because again, this isn't an invitation to keep traumatizing ourselves or re-traumatizing ourselves. This is an invitation to our liberation, which is that we understand our suffering, we find the cause of it, we transform it. And in the process of transforming, we gain the insight such that when we meet that suffering again, it doesn't have the same effect. There's a difference. The pattern has been shifted, so it doesn't fall, it doesn't become habit. These habitual tendencies is really why we keep suffering, right? And so the practice is to change that habit so that when we face these things that cause harm, it doesn't go back into the habitual patterning, and there's no pattern anymore. There's not a road for it to travel down, right? Because that's what a pattern is. There's a road. It's a well-walked or driven road. So when we, you know, change that road, put brush over it, plant trees in its path, there is no road anymore for that to happen, for that same thing to occur. Now there's a new path is found, a new way is made forward. And this is the beauty, I think, that the Avatamsaka Sutra and the practice of with the elements allow us. That nature is always shifting. With every storm, things change and a new path is forged. We had tropical storm here this past week, and the hike, I went to the place I often go, and just this storm by itself with the trees that fell down, I couldn't walk the same path because it was now not, the pattern was gone. I had to make a new path. Yeah. So this is it, right? It's any moment it shifts. And when it shifts, nature is telling us, there's always another way. And this practice is what allows us the opportunity to stay open, to stay spacious, to be inclusive, practice with equanimity, so that we can see everything that's there. What else is here? Oh, look, I can make a new path here. I don't have to turn around. So I will stop there. Thank you for your listening. Let's listen to a sound of the bell and let all that just flow away.